This is Mental, the podcast to destigmatize mental health. I'm Bobby Timps.
I'm Danny Hogan.
Each Thursday, we delve into a factor or condition that influences the mind and how to better manage it. With special guests and stats you can trust, here we go. This week, we're talking all about group therapy with Tanya Kolesnik, who has been working as a psychotherapist and coach since 1995 and ended up pursuing this field through many positive, if intimidating initially, experiences with group therapy. I really enjoyed exploring this theme with her because we, as you'll hear, drill down into so many of the benefits of group therapy. And whilst this is an approach that I definitely believed in prior to this conversation, I didn't mind showing on air how delighted I was to learn all kinds of benefits from this kind of therapeutic environment that I, you know, wasn't even fully aware of yet. And you'll hear me even talk about considering this as something that I need to explore for my own therapeutic journey. And, you know, that was entirely genuine. That was not me blowing smoke up the guests, whatever. I really meant it. And so maybe watch this space. I will be having a chat with my own counsellor about whether this is maybe something to explore as a next step for me. But for now, I really hope you enjoy this conversation. There's a lot of misconceptions that we potentially squash here. There is validating of how nerve-wracking the idea of sharing certain things in front of other people in addition to the therapist, and what can happen when you do overcome those concerns, and how those additional people can also be very validating for our experiences, not by, you know, being a mental health professional like the therapist role, but instead by finding commonality with people and realizing that there is a lot that, like we often say on the show, there's far more that unites us than divides us. And so even when people come from very different backgrounds, even when we might have made certain assumptions that people wouldn't be able to relate to us or we wouldn't be able to relate to them, group therapy can be a way of overcoming that in practice rather than perhaps more so in theory at times. Anyway, as you can probably tell, I've really enjoyed this conversation. I found Tanya such an insightful guest to talk to. I really appreciated how much she shared her own journey, in particularly the beginning of this conversation, but also the way that she's working on things behind the scenes now and trying to find the balance between being open about changing aspects of her work and the way she prioritizes group therapy as more of a primary approach for her than it ever has, and the way that she is repositioning group therapy as even more of a primary approach in her work than ever before, and balances those kind of life changes and the newness around certain marketing of that versus, you know, keeping boundaries with her clients as well. And I found that part particularly worth exploring as well, because I know I have certainly had it in the past, and I don't mind saying even including on this show, where I've met counsellors and assumed that everything in their life behind the scenes must all be in order, all very stable, all very taken in their stride. And, you know, it is human to overcome hurdles, no matter what our tools are. So with that in mind, we'll get into this conversation with Tanya Kolesnik in a moment. But first, oh, and one last thing to share and break my own format, because we're meant to have gone to the ad break. I was reading in the notes and the background I had of today's guest that she describes her most important focus through her work as helping people to live lives that light them up. And, you know, sometimes when things are phrased quite differently to how I would phrase them, it can be tricky to bridge the gap between what does that mean to them? How can I interpret that in my own way? And I feel like I had to mention that having talked to Tanya, having got to know her briefly in this way, helping people to live lives that light them up, I really see exactly what she means now. Because when she talks about therapy, and particularly group therapy, she just glows, even through a Zoom screen. So I hope she won't mind that bit of added on flattery, because I think you're hearing in her voice, but I thought it was worth saying. Yeah. I love it. I hope that the things I believe in come across as organically and make as much sense when people meet me or get to hear about my work. So yeah, wonderful stuff. Do I still say but first? Will I get in trouble with Pete? Who's our sponsor? Let's find out.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
My name is Tanya Cole Lesnick, and one of the first experiences that I had with mental health is growing up with a mother who had, I didn't know this at the time, but had a lot of anxiety that came out as anger and rage. And later on, I learned a lot more about what it was that led to the anger and rage. But growing up in that environment, being a child in that environment, I often made myself wrong and learned how to not set her off. And that's when some of my people-pleasing tendencies began. And some of the issues that I had with self-worth also were connected to that experience. So that was throughout my whole growing up. And then years later in my 20s, I explored therapy for the first time myself as a client and started to peel away some of those layers and understood more about what was likely going on with my mother, understood the anxiety piece, and no longer made it about me, but that stuff was pretty entrenched and was quite an ongoing journey to heal and still comes up from time to time.
No, I can imagine. And I'm glad to hear that you've had the time and space to work on that, because it's so common that people can have that experience and can internalize these seemingly helpful coping strategies at the time when, you know, as a child, how can you correctly interpret the behavior of your mom, particularly when we're getting those kind of like secondary created emotions where it's the anxiety is the problem, but what you're seeing as an outsider to that person's brain is anger, and anger is an emotion about changing things. And you're like, okay, well, something must be wrong. What did I do?
Yeah.
Because she keeps getting angry around me.
Yeah, exactly. So that was a lot of what I learned to navigate as a kid.
Mm-hmm. And when it came to a point of considering therapy, was that something that you'd sort of batted around in your mind and thought about on and off, or was it something that was more decision, let's go for it?
Yeah, so it was absolutely not something I'd ever considered. My parents actually had gone, by then they had gone to couples therapy themselves, and I knew that they had. I didn't know much beyond that. And I think in my mind, therapy was for people with, and I'm putting up air quotes, real problems. And I don't think I saw myself as somebody with real problems. Actually, when I first started to think about it, it was very much connected to wanting a love relationship that was lasting. And I was struggling to have that in my life. And I didn't really understand why. And I wasn't thinking, oh, that's not a reason to go to therapy. But at the time, I had a habit that I was not thrilled with. I used to smoke cigarettes, and I went to a gym that offered this program to help you quit smoking. And so I decided to sign up for that, a more socially acceptable way in. And that ended up being in a therapist's office with a group. So it was a little bit my introduction to therapy at all and to group therapy. And I loved it. Like, I loved connecting to people on a more human level. And even though we were talking about smoking, we were getting fairly deep. And so from that experience, then I started to open up to the idea of therapy and got a couple of names from my parents. I asked them, and within a few phone calls I had scheduled my first session with a therapist named Bonnie, and I loved the experience. Immediately felt seen, and the healing was pretty immediate in terms of having that sense moving forward.
Mm-hmm. That's so great to hear. And that's something that I think sometimes can be missed in the conversations around therapy, of the importance of that therapeutic relationship can be so healing. You know, both of you turning up at the set time, on time every week, can actually do so much for a client, even before you get into what happens in the sessions.
Yeah, I think just that feeling alone, that probably even the scheduling, because I don't remember the specifics, but I do remember feeling so relieved. And I think right away, even scheduling with her, feeling like, okay, good. You know, there's somebody who I feel is going to help me and take some sort of care of me.
Yeah, make that time and that space. And when you think back, can you remember some of the reasons why therapy wasn't something you'd even considered? Were the misconceptions that you had going in?
So this was a long time ago. I did this, I was going to say almost 30 years. That was over 30 years ago. So I think it was 1990 when I first went to therapy. And it was New York City. So New York City really was the place where it was the most accepted. But I just remember feeling so much stigma. I felt a lot of shame about it. I think the idea that I had is like, other people don't need this. Other people are doing just fine, but I'm struggling more than other people. Mm-hmm. And so I think I felt a lot of shame about struggle, a lot of shame about not being more together than I thought, as I thought everybody else was. So, yeah.
Yeah. And I think with the stigma that can be so prevalent, it's easy to fall into that way of thinking that there are people that have mental illness and those that don't, and people that struggle and people that shouldn't be struggling. And do you feel like that was exacerbated by some of your experiences with your mom, where you'd felt the need to kind of shrink yourself to not trigger anger? And so then the idea that you had real issues of your own and you had the right to speak up and be heard was affected by that?
I wasn't even paying attention to myself and my own needs and my own feelings, really. I was so caught up in kind of my mother and responding to her. So that it was almost a surprise to me when I realized that, oh, wait, I've got stuff too that I need to deal with. Is that what you were sort of asking about? Or
Yes, that. And also often when a child is feeling like they have to sort of tiptoe around a parent to that extent, there can be a sort of shrinking of them feeling like they can take up space and that their problems can be real at all.
Yes, to those things were factors. And then the other thing that came to my mind as well is not wanting to associate with her. I had a lot of anger towards her because I didn't like the way she treated me. So I tiptoed around her, but resented how she treated me sometimes. And so I think there's that other piece of where I felt like she's out of control. I don't want to be anything like her. And then maybe looking at my emotions and feeling more connected to her was not something I was necessarily wanting to do.
Mm-hmm. Yes, of course, I can see that. And by contrast, you go into this group therapy environment, which can be pretty intimidating to so many people. And can you talk through that experience and how you did find that to be positive?
So the group therapy that you're referring to is this therapist, Bonnie, that I started with. I started with her individually, but then pretty early on, she wanted me to go into group therapy as opposed to the one about smoking, because there were these two experiences.
I see. Do you mind sharing how the smoking one went? Because that was group therapy, wasn't it? Yeah.
So going into this experience with smoking, or to quit smoking, I'm trying to remember how many people were in it, maybe six or so people. And I think some older than I was at the time, men, people that I wouldn't necessarily feel like I would relate to. And I think having the common issue of smoking and wanting to quit smoking was kind of an instant connecting thing for all of us. And it gave us a certain level of safety that we might not have experienced in another type of group setting. Mm-hmm. And so it gave us some content. But from that content, hearing people talk about, I don't know, feeling empty maybe was one of the experiences that people had, that smoking was sort of filling for them, or feeling like cigarettes were this friend that was always there for them, whether they, you know, whether anybody was around or not, or feeling a little bit lost and not quite sure what to do with your time, all of those things, and connecting on a deeper level to these people that I didn't otherwise know, felt so much safer. I think I had been putting on such a facade for so many years of like, I want to just be the way I'm supposed to be in this world and show up the way I'm supposed mm-hmm. to show up, and looking around for clues outside of me. Like, how do we do this? How do we show up and do this? Like, being a successful person thing, what did that look like? And I think this smoking group was the first time the curtain was pulled back and I was able to see inside with people I didn't know very well. That might be the kind of thing that I had experienced with close friends, but only with close friends, where we would get into our inner worlds. But everybody else, it was a much more, we had much more facades, I think, prior mm-hmm. to being in that experience.
Yes. And of course, we can make all those kind of assumptions that, oh, we connect to our close friends because of how long we've known them, or that we're similar to them. And so then to have that pleasant surprise of how much you could relate to other people's lives in a way that you just didn't think is yeah. so lovely to hear. And I'm also interested in what you said about having the shared topic of smoking to talk about, because I think that's something that comes up a lot when people are considering therapy is, you know, what are their reasons? Sometimes people can feel there has to be this good justification that they have to deserve it, or they need to have issues that are serious enough to warrant therapy. And maybe that's part of what they need to work on. And my mentality has always been, whatever you can do to get in the room. Like, I was very much a stereotype of a lot of men, where my first ever therapy session, I just had a rant about work. And that felt like, you know, a safer topic than a lot of the things that I knew I was actually there to talk about.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe in a way you got that with this group, where you went in and you were like, okay, well, if in doubt, I can always go back to talking about cigarettes.
Yeah, I think it makes it feel safer, I think. Knowing that this bond exists, we all have this same goal of wanting to quit smoking, definitely felt safer. And I think that was what pulled me away from wanting to do therapy to begin with, that idea of like, I don't know if I have a really legitimate reason. And if it doesn't feel strong enough, if it doesn't feel like I'm struggling enough, is this, what's the word? I was going to say frivolous. That's not the right word. But like, is this excessive? Is this mm-hmm. more than I need? Is this okay to need?
Is it valid?
Yeah. Is it valid? Yeah. I think that's the right word. Yeah.
And I mean, for me, a part of my justification was I first got therapy through a workplace where it was something we could access for free. And so part of my justification was, well, I should use the benefit. Why wouldn't I? And, you know, when I look back on that now and I'm like, that was partly me justifying it to myself to overcome some of these thoughts. But, you know, whatever you need to do to get in the room. If I was yeah. there being like, I'm going to get the freebie off the company, that's why I'm doing this. Fine. I knew that there were more serious things that I was approaching it for. Yeah. And you were going to share about how when you started working with Bonnie and that was one-on-one therapy, that she then suggested group therapy could be beneficial.
Yes. So she very early on suggested that I add group therapy. And that scared, even though I had such a positive experience with the group about smoking, it scared me because I was talking to Bonnie about all of these more intimate things about my life overall and feelings of self-worth, which I don't think that stuff came up so much in the other group mm-hmm. about smoking. So right away, the idea of it felt much more vulnerable. But I was pretty quickly developing a trust with her. And I felt like, all right, she must know what she's doing. If she thinks this is going to be helpful for me, I'm just going to go with it. And there was a part of me that was sort of intrigued and curious. Mm-hmm. And so I said, okay, I would try it. So I went. It was pretty scary. I went and I started group when other people had already been in group for a while. So I was joining and I met the others in the waiting room while they were waiting for group, and they're chatting with each other. Clearly they know each other. I know nobody. And I have a tendency anyway to feel shy. And I think I just felt so awkward and shy. And we went into group. And the first group, I did not say almost a word throughout the whole thing. And I had assumed Bonnie would introduce me to the others, but she didn't. And so I just remember feeling like so weird and nervous and wondering, like maybe even angry at her, like, why is she not helping me feel safer in this situation? And not all groups run that way. I do introduce people when they join the group, but I did understand the value of me finding my voice and developing some comfort with putting myself out there. But even in that session, it took to the end when Bonnie said, "Tanya, why are you so quiet?" And I introduced myself to the others, and they responded to me as if they hadn't even noticed me, even though I was with them since the waiting room and probably an hour at least into the group. But, and then people were receptive.
Wow. That's fascinating to me, because that's the sort of like intangible learning you can pick up through therapy, is something like your nervousness in that situation was having such an external effect on how you were behaving and being perceived, that it was like you weren't there, that, you know, you were in the background, and yet you were at a chair like everyone else. And I can see what you mean, definitely, about like that expectation of being introduced, of being like caught up. And that's what we'd expect of being brought into other group environments. And I wonder if that was, you know, that was part of why she thought the group environment would be so beneficial to you. Did she, when she was suggesting it, give you a kind of pitch on why she thought it would benefit you so much?
I don't remember that she did. She may have some. I feel like for me, I didn't ask a lot of questions. I think I just went on kind of blind faith, okay, and felt afraid of it. She might have, but I continued to work with her individually and do group at the same time. So maybe not leading up to it, but then after, we would process some of what came up for me in group. And that was so helpful. And I just remember things like feeling like I didn't measure up and talking to her about other people seem so much more successful than me or smarter than me. And then I just remember her saying, "Oh, you're buying that, are you?" And that was just so disarming right away. So being able to process some of that was very powerful and life-changing.
Yeah, and I really love that idea of the combination of getting to go into that experience, make assumptions potentially about other people, and then be able to kind of have that explored in your own time with her in a way that, mm-hmm. you know, in many situations we don't get to have that. If you didn't have the group as well, well, she would be challenging maybe some of your expectations, but based on people that she doesn't know. And so mm-hmm. she's having to pick up on things, whereas there's almost that additional layer where you can kind of brainstorm what people are like with that additional context.
Right, right. And also, not only does she know the people that I might be responding to, but she also is having a shared experience with me. So mm-hmm. the very specifics of each group session, I can say, this is what was going on emotionally with me in this moment that we shared. And yeah, that was a very cool experience. And I think such a big part of my healing process.
Yeah, because it's a really great way, by the sounds of it, to put a lot of the tools into practice and, you know, have that feedback loop of how you were trying to gain confidence in the group and talk about certain things that maybe you talk to her about, and then talking about them more publicly, it's like a stepping stone to then maybe having conversations in the rest of your life.
Totally. Yeah. And that's one of the things that I always say, is that group is really a microcosm for your world outside of group. And so whatever's happening in there is most likely also happening outside of group. And this stepping stone idea as well. It's like, okay, you've got the individual piece, and then group is like one step outside of that, and then practicing some of those same things in the world outside of the therapeutic environment is sort of the step after that.
Mm-hmm. And so how did you find then settling into that with that combination? How did the further sessions go?
I felt so present and connected in group. It was probably the most, I'm trying to think of the right wording, real? I don't know if that's the right word, but just connected. I think it was the most connected, comfortable in my own skin, sort of. Although sometimes I remember getting, sometimes when I'd share, feeling very, very cold afterwards, or very, very hot. Like, just, I think I had a visceral reaction sometimes to some of the intensity of it. But to get to know people on that level was amazing to me. And I think, as I said, I went to therapy to begin with because I was really interested in developing a long-term love relationship, and that wasn't happening. And I think what I worked on in group is realizing how what I would see as flaws of myself were really parts of the human condition, and that other people shared it and that kind of thing. And my ability to start letting go of some of that impacted how I showed up in the world overall. And I started to connect to more people outside of it. And I, during this time, met who is now my husband. We've almost been married for 30 years. So the reason why I went to group happened fairly early on, maybe a year or so into group. I met him and the relationship was solid. We have two grown kids. But it was that experience of connecting to myself and starting to believe in my own self-worth and no longer seeing myself as flawed in the way that I had come to group feeling that I was, led to me actually changing my career. So I started out as a graphic designer. And during this time when I was first in group, that was the career that I had. But I was so finding so much meaning in this connection. And it was so transformative for me that I decided to want to dedicate my life to being able to create that kind of experience for other people as well. So I went back to school and became a therapist.
I love that. And may I ask, with those motivations coming into therapy, did that also relate to the smoking? Was that one of the ways you'd maybe externalized of, oh, if I didn't smoke, was that a thing you thought men were being scared away from?
Oh, totally. Yeah, for sure. That was part of when I first wanted to quit. I think that was a big part of it, was feeling like there were enough men that I'd come across that were turned off by it. So that was for sure some of the motivation.
Yeah. No, I didn't quite know how to ask that question, but I wondered, and it's funny how we can, even when we're trying to be vulnerable, still kind of try and reduce our experience down to like, if I just fix this one external thing, then it'll be okay. And I think we know how deep down a lot of these roots can go, and perhaps why you thought, okay, smoking is perhaps the problem I'm tackling, but I know there's more to why I'm doing this.
Yeah. And actually, because the smoking group was first, I had quit by the time I went to the other group. I had fully quit. But you're right, like, that's what brought me in. And for sure, it was something that I was like, maybe I'll be more attractive to people if I do this. What can I fix? Like, that idea. And I think a lot of people do go into therapy with that idea. What can I fix? How can I fix it? And actually, now that I am a therapist, look to me to say, what can you fix? Because I want to feel better. What can you fix? And of course, it's not the way it works.
Yes, which is both transformational, but can also make you go like, ugh. Because it's like, oh, it's not as simple as things being fixed. But yeah. The plus side is that also means you're not broken, which can be the mentality.
Yes. Yeah.
So yeah. Instead, there's a lot of tuning work to do, and it is very much work.
Right.
And so you were going to share a bit about getting into your profession now then.
Yeah, so I decided to go back to school. I got a master's degree in social work from New York University. And that was a two-year program. I went straight through, pretty directly through that, and started to do some work as a therapist. But I feel like some of the work that I did as a therapist, as important as it was in my professional development, I wasn't doing as much group work as I had envisioned. I think in my mind, I had always wanted to do multiple groups and have that be the primary. But it seems that it went the other way, which is I would do more individual work. And that group was in addition to that. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I would have additional groups. I don't think I was prepared for how scared people were of group. And so with my dream and my goal and my direction, I feel like I started to go down a slightly different path than what I had envisioned.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I can definitely see how that would happen. And it's interesting. I'll share something for me currently, which is I mentioned to you off air that I've been seeing the same counselor for 4 years. And we're starting to get to the point now where it feels like a lot of things have been worked through and that maybe I take a break. I'm sure something will come up in the future, some big life change. And, you know, I'm open to going back to it, but it's seeming like maybe it could be the time to kind of wrap things up for now, which is very exciting. And a lot of that is being able to see all these things that come up in my life now, where by the time I talk to her, I've already processed it. And so it can be like some weeks we're sort of scrabbling around like, okay, what's left? Because I don't, you know, it doesn't really make sense that I just tell you stories of things that are fine. And it makes me wonder, even in this conversation, whether a group is something that I hadn't thought about and maybe I should have. Because, you know, one thing that, yes, challenges come up, but I've got a lot of the coping mechanisms and the tools to process and like make changes and set boundaries quite quickly. But what would be a nice extra step would be if in certain group dynamics or when meeting new people, I could sort of preempt some of the issues coming up in the first place. And maybe like we talked about with stepping stones, I should have been thinking about group as an option more than I have been.
Yeah. And of course, that's where my mind went. As you can tell, I love group. And I feel like early on is still really powerful. Obviously, that's what my experience was. But what you describe, I think, happens a lot, whereas people feel like there's still work to be done, probably, but that the conversations have been had, you know, sort of what the issues are, you can process them probably in your therapist's voice without her necessarily needing to be there because you've had the conversations and they're you've gone through some of these things, I'm sure, more than once. And so group is great that way because I think the thing about group is it can touch on unconscious stuff. And so you might find yourself having a reaction you didn't expect. Or you might find yourself really resonating when somebody is sharing something from their life that you didn't necessarily even ever bring into therapy, but realize, oh, something's coming up for me. And so there is something about that experience with other human beings that helps you start to feel some of this other stuff that are not necessarily the things that you bring into therapy because they're not maybe on the top of mind at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think one of the things that fascinates me most about it is the kind of normalizing power of, like you touched on, having people from different backgrounds dealing with different kinds of issues and stuff to work through than you. And yet there can be so much like shared humanity in being vulnerable together and realizing, you know, in a way that we can know in theory, you're seeing very much in practice how the mask can be very different to the reality for each person. And I think that's something that I am very intrigued about, of seeing these kind of dynamics play out in a safe space where we get to open up more than you maybe would in other environments. Or when you feel vulnerable, you feel safe to lean into that and talk it through in a way that maybe you might still, even if you have the tools, run away and then figure it out behind closed doors.
Right. Like, so there's something about being vulnerable in the moment, doing some of the work. Yeah. I think there's a certain amount of safety that you get as a given for the most part. I mean, obviously the relationship has to be right, but in terms of a therapist-client relationship, there is kind of this expected that person is hired to sort of be on your side. Of course, there's got to be genuine work in there, and good connection is so important. But in the group, that's less of a given. And so to have these experiences when maybe somebody pisses you off, how do you deal with that? And do you deal with it head on in the moment, or do you not? And that could be part of that separate processing that we talked about like bringing it into your individual session to process. But some of that work would be, okay, the next time you're in that experience and somebody pisses you off, how would you handle it directly? What might you say? And kind of getting ready to have more of a voice about some of those things, rather than what you were describing about that going inward and leaving and sort of not dealing with it right then and there.
Mm-hmm. And could you share a bit about the things that have held back clients of yours that you've been seeing one-on-one, or potential clients to join a group, in terms of what, you know, what their worries were about that environment?
Yeah. I think the primary concern is that I'm not going to have time focused on me. I want to work on my issues, and I don't want to be waiting for other people to talk about their issues. So I would say that's probably that. And then the other primary concern is the vulnerability piece, that people worry about sharing their struggles in front of other people. I think there's a real fear of being vulnerable in that kind of way. And I think there's a confusion about that group is actually in some ways more powerful. Not instead of, I mean, I think there's room, both are helpful to have group and individual. And like we've talked about, I think having the two together is especially helpful. But I think sometimes people see group as a place that where you just put together for convenience, or you're just put together because somebody's giving you a lesser product in a way. And I think for people to really understand that, no, there is something about group, knowing you're not alone, being human together, having some accountability, and even as relationships develop, as people are in group together, that there is something that happens without me, whereas they are checking in with each other and not waiting for me to guide them, because the relationships start to develop. And I think people don't understand that.
Mm. And that bit really warms my heart, to think of, you know, the clients being able to support each other, and that being such a great template to carry on into the rest of your world. And the other thing I surprisingly like is what you mentioned of like one of the main concerns, because making sure you had enough time to talk your own stuff through and get your own work done isn't perhaps what I would have assumed as one of the most common things that would hold people back from group therapy. And that kind of gives me hope that you're meeting a lot of people that are, you know, really serious about doing the work and, you know, understand how transformational therapy can be, even if they see certain contrasts that aren't actually there with what they want to achieve and what can be achieved in a group.
Yeah, you mean the fact that they actually even want to hold on to that space for themselves means that they're using it, they're doing some work.
Yeah, that's kind of exciting that they're going in and being like, okay, I've got loads of work to do, I want to get on with it. I'm like, great, they're getting what therapy is for. That gives me a lot of hope.
Yeah. And I'm thinking, so a lot of my clients, when I'm encouraging group, I do get a lot of resistance. And then sometimes I'll have clients that finally say, okay, I'll try it. Okay, I'll do it. And then I'll get this like, okay, now I get it. where they have the experience and they start to connect to the other people and find that, oh, work does actually get done, and they get it. And I remember that from when I was in group with Bonnie, we all would sort of tease her for being so pushy about group. But then having the awareness once we got that experience under our belt a bit that, okay, I understand that it's powerful.
Yeah.
And part of the reason why, as I'm sort of wanting to lead more with this group work, part of the reason why I'm interested in being on podcasts, and I started to do some TikTok and Instagram videos and that kind of thing with my intention of building more community, my hope is that people could feel a little bit safer going into the idea of doing group without such a long period of resistance, because I think it would be amazing if people, more people would sort of take that leap of faith and get to really reap the benefits and be a part of this amazing experience.
Mm-hmm. And something I want to ask you about in terms of like structure of groups, I know that it can vary so widely in terms of, let's say, how much the therapist, you know, leads the discussions, how much they intervene, how much they don't. You know, each group can be so different, but what are your thoughts around how similar the needs of the people joining a group should be? And, you know, how do you make those kind of decisions when arranging groups in your own work?
Well, right now, all the groups that I run are women, all women. I've done co-ed groups before and I would do it again, but at the moment they're all women. So not that that makes people have a ton in common, but I tend to have some overlap with my clients in terms of, I think there's some overlap with me and what some of my issues are as well. So a lot of my clients have perfectionistic tendencies and have maybe a history of people pleasing and putting themselves on the back burner. So that does tend to be a lot of the focus that we have. How do you stop depleting yourself? How do you prioritize self-care? How do you start to take care of yourself? Many of those things, I think, are very human issues. And so I think I do have some belief that there's always going to be some level of overlap. What went into my mind is the idea that I have some people going through divorce in my group and other people going through a career crisis, and they totally can overlap. There's a lot of issues that can come up underneath the deeper issues that they really relate to. So I do think that there are some groups that maybe aren't a good fit for people, and my group isn't a good fit for everybody, but I think most of the human stuff can be worked on in my group.
Mm-hmm. And I think that can be very enlightening to people as well, that they can find themselves relating to experiences they have never had. And, you know, knowing how to have those conversations again, let's say someone's dealing with a particular type of, like a divorce is very specific, and, you know, but they've had breakups, or they've had they've had other things in their life perhaps end, and might be surprised by some of the commonality, because whilst the situation differs, a lot of the emotions, a lot of the things that it would bring up in you can be so similar.
Yeah.
And one of the things we talked about off air was in terms of like life changes also for you behind the scenes. So you've mentioned about trying to focus more on groups as a primary part of your work, and that there's then behind the scenes work you have to do to kind of deal with that pivot and that life change. And, you know, that maybe runs contrast to sometimes the trap we can fall into of thinking that therapists have it all together and that everything, they just take it all in their stride because they already know the things.
Yeah, I mean, so I'm going through my own journey of being new again at this, sort of redefining what I want my practice to be like and to come at it from a very different way of building it up. Back in the day when I first became a therapist, I used to do a lot of public speaking or workshops at churches and synagogues and schools and gyms and things like that, all local, because everything used to be in person. And now that things are virtual, starting to embrace, okay, well, what does that look like? And so I think I mentioned briefly doing some Instagram and TikTok videos. They're actually the same videos, but opening myself up and using this as a tool, and then guesting on podcasts and creating a very short documentary, only like 10 minutes or so, of my own story of how group changed my life. And it's not done yet, but that's going to be put out there in the world. So really putting myself out there in a much bigger way than I've ever done. And there's anxiety connected to that, and some fear, and being new and trying to learn how to navigate some of the ins and outs of that. So yeah, and I'm transparent with clients when it fits and when it feels like it will be helpful for us to process as they're working on their own journey. But I think as a therapist, we have such expectations of our clients to take risks and make some changes in their lives. And of course, it's easier said than done. So being in it, yeah, it feels very powerful. But also it feels like there's something about me being more in it that I think allows too my clients to see, okay, she's taking more of a risk, and so maybe I can take this next step. So I think there's some permission in there as well.
Mm-hmm. I love that. And yeah, that's something that I think I very much benefit from, having seen the same person for 4 years, that we have a very specific dynamic at this point, that a lot of the kind of overarching approaches from her have remained the same, but we have like little in jokes, and we have elements of humor and elements of bluntness and honesty, where if you just showed up to one of our therapy sessions, you might be like, oh, this isn't the boundaries I might have expected, but it works and it's within context. And I think that's, you know, that's also very powerful and sometimes overlooked, the progression of that dynamic. You know, we've mentioned the dynamic with others in the group, but also there should be an allowance for progression of your dynamic with your counselor.
Right. You're both human. You're having a real relationship. Yes, it has a specific function, but it's still real. And it's not going to be as impactful if it's not felt on a level of truth. So
Yeah. And we want that as clients. And that's one of the challenging things for you to navigate, of what that means. You know, I think like many people, I went into seeing her with this feeling of, I want to be one of the favorite clients. And I felt really weird admitting that to anyone, but it turns out a lot of people have that, where they, you know, we kind of are going in and being vulnerable, and some way that feels like a way to mitigate it, of, oh, okay, at least if my stories are interesting, or my stuff is a bit different to some of the other stuff she probably has to hear about all day. And, you know, that's part of like getting used to what we need to work on actually being valid. You know, that's part of the work we have to do. And so absolutely, mm-hmm. there should be boundaries there, but then maybe later down the line, it does make sense within context that I overcome certain things and I can tell that she's proud of me.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I think that, I mean, to be on the other side of this and to watch people grow and transform in their lives really is such a privilege and such an honor to see that. And it's, I think there's nothing better for a therapist coach than to watch your clients start to grow in the ways that, even if that's not what they came in mind for, what they wanted for themselves, but start to grow in ways where you know that they're living more authentically and in better alignment inside and out, and happier, whatever that means, more in peace, whatever that means. Mm-hmm. And that's an amazing experience to watch.
Yeah, definitely. And yet with that example, I realized that if I'd had more of that positive reinforcement too soon, I may have potentially shifted a bit too much into doing the work to please her, and externalizing some of that stuff of, okay, my stuff is valid as long as this person who I respect thinks it's valid, versus finding that from within me.
Yeah, really good insight. And I'm thinking, you were talking about kind of wanting to be especially special to your therapist. And it sounded like almost an entertainment piece as well. Like you wanted to keep her engaged and interested and wanting to do that. And I'm thinking, I've also had clients say, you know, they want to ace therapy. They want to sort of do it just right, do all the homework that they need to do, but not for themselves, but to please me. And so, yeah, there's a lot of different layers that can impact, and that are, those layers are the work. So, yeah.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I could say so much more on that, but we sadly do need to wrap up. So would you mind sharing just lastly, Is there any kind of final anecdote you would want to share of what group therapy can do in the life of a particular client, or something that you see that comes up a lot that surprises people as a positive? And then we'll wrap up.
I think one of the most, lovely parts of group is when clients start to share their stories and then realize who they are in each other's stories. So somebody might be sharing something about their partner, and somebody else in group identifies with the partner, not the client sharing, but the partner. And they're able to then have a conversation about what might be tricky to be on the other side of that dynamic and why that's tricky. And that conversation feels so much safer than it probably does with the partner in the more heated moments. And so somebody's able to process, okay, like I can hear what it's like to be on the other side of that. I'm not feeling emotionally triggered by hearing that. And then that perspective helps the healing outside of there. So I think just that, how different people can represent other people in each other's lives. And that's amazing.
Definitely. That kind of gave me chills even hearing about that. So fascinating. And yeah. So if people want to learn more about your work, experience some of the stuff you're putting out there of resources online, or maybe even work with you, where should they go?
Probably the easiest place to remember, because my name is a little bit hard to remember, Tanya Cole Lesnick is my website. But I think if people go on to either TikTok or Instagram, whichever they prefer, it's Tanya the Therapist, all one word. So that's T-A-N-Y-A, the Therapist, all one word. You can see some of the videos that I've made on there, all related to mental health, but there's a link there to my website. So I think that's just the easiest way to remember. And then once you're on my website, I do have free discovery sessions for anybody that's considering group. And I'd be happy to talk anybody through how I think group therapy would be helpful for them in particular with what they want to be working on in group and start that process.
Brilliant. Well, thank you so much.
Oh. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening. For a list of our recommended resources, visit mentalpodcast.co.uk. And remember, we are in no way a substitute for qualified counselling or other mental health support. Our show is edited and produced by the brilliant Pete Murta, with licensed music by NetSky. Links in the description. Speak to you next Thursday. And remember, you are enough.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
We all know that owning a small business means you wear many hats, but sometimes you really need an extra pair of hands. Upwork is how good companies find great and trusted freelance talent. With more than 2 decades of experience, with the simple and ambitious goal of pioneering a better way of working, companies at every stage turn to Upwork to get things done and find more flexibility in staffing key projects and initiatives. They access a global marketplace filled with top talent in IT, web dev, marketing, and more. Posting a job on Upwork is easy. With no cost to join, you can register, browse freelancer profiles, and get help drafting a job post or even book a consultation. From there, you connect with freelancers that get you and can easily hire them and take your business to the next level. Visit Upwork.com right now and post your job for free. That's Upwork.com to post your job for free and connect with top talent ready to help your business grow. That's Upwork.com, Upwork.com.